A reading from the book of Genesis, chapter 19, verses 15 to 29. And this is an abbreviated reading. As dawn was breaking, the angels urged Lot on, saying, "On your way, take with you your wife and your two daughters who are here, or you will be swept away in the punishment of Sodom." When he hesitated, the man, by the Lord's mercy, seized his hand and the hands of his wife and his two daughters and led them to safety outside the city. As soon as they had been brought outside, he was told, "Flee for your life. Don't look back or stop anywhere on the plain. Get off to the hills at once, or you will be swept away." The sun was just rising over the earth, and Lot arrived in Zoar. At the same time, the Lord rained down sulfurous fire upon Sodom and Gomorrah from the Lord out of heaven. God overthrew those cities and the whole plain, together with the inhabitants of the cities and the produce of the soil. But Lot's wife looked back, and she was turned into a pillar of salt. Early the next morning, Abraham went to the place where he had stood in the Lord's presence. As he looked down towards Sodom and Gomorrah and the whole region of the plain, he saw dense smoke over the land rising like fumes from a furnace. Thus it came to pass, when God destroyed the cities of the plain, God was mindful of Abraham by sending Lot away from the upheaval by which God overthrew the cities where Lot had been living. The word of the Lord. Well, if you don't know much about Lot, we certainly know about Sodom and Gomorrah, at least by reputation. Those cities destroyed by God for their sinfulness. There's been more than one movie, I'm sure, that has portrayed the licentiousness of these cities and presented their fiery destruction from the heavens. Certainly the people of Jesus' time knew of Sodom and Gomorrah, and Jesus, in condemning those who reject his offer of mercy, says, "It'll go easier for Sodom and Gomorrah on the day of judgment than it will be for this generation." In a previous story, Abraham tried to bargain with God so that God wouldn't destroy Sodom. The deal was that Abraham would have to find at least 10 good people, and Abraham couldn't. Lot's going to be saved because he and his family are good. And we don't hear much about Lot in these daily readings this week and next. We're going to quickly go back to the story of Abraham. So we have this one story of Lot, who was Abraham's nephew, who parted from Abraham, settled with his family in Sodom, that wicked place. God had already decided to destroy Sodom, but wanted to spare Lot. So God sends two messengers to warn Lot. Lot doesn't know who they are, but when he sees two strangers at the city gate, he does what people of the time were supposed to do. He welcomes them into his home. The messengers go to Lot's home. And just before this story, we hear of a sordid moment. The citizens rush to Lot's home and want him to turn over these two visitors so they can be gang raped. Now that's not what got Sodom destroyed. God had already planned to destroy the city because the people were wicked. God planned to destroy them even before their inhospitality to the messengers, before their vile intentions. The story turns on hospitality. Among desert people, hospitality wasn't just about going to someone's home or tent for tea and cake. Hospitality in the desert was a matter of life and death. A traveler could die in the desert. They would rely on the hospitality of all the other nomads they would meet along the way or villages they might enter. the way they did it in the village, for example, was they would arrive in a place, a town, go to the town square, sit down, and wait. Someone in the town would notice them, a stranger, and invite them into their home. And if they didn't offer hospitality anyone in the town, the whole place would be noted for their lack of hospitality. They'd get a bad reputation. Everyone in the region would hear about it. So Lot welcomes the two men into his home, not because they were angels from God, but because they were traveling strangers, and he was hospitable. Aren't we all travelers in one sort of desert or another? The desert of loneliness or sickness, of sin? Aren't we travelers through barren terrain, surrounded by unbelief at work or even at home? Don't we travel through a harsh world and live in a world of violence and war? And aren't we like the old travelers, passing over rocky terrain because we have doubts of faith along the way? We're all desert travelers, aren't we? We may not need water, food, and dwelling the way those old travelers did in biblical times or in some places of the world right now, but we certainly need some relief on our long faith journey as we try not to lose that faith on our way home to God. At this Eucharist, we're welcomed in by God. God's the host. Not because we've earned being God's guests of honor, not for anything we've done, but because God has seen our need, our weariness, noted even our straying, and wants to get us back on our feet for the next part of our travels. So God prepares a table for us, just as the prophet Isaiah promised, a table of rich food, the finest drink. God knows our hunger, sees our road weariness, and invites us in with other travelers to the warmth and the relief of this table. So much like God in the past, God befriended Israel when they were strangers in the foreign land of Egypt. God rescues Lot and his family, people of faith among a callous people. God's done the same for us, hosted us, not because we're exemplary, but because we've come a long way on our journey and we have further to go. And what shall we do when we leave this table to continue our travels home today, or wherever we're going? Do we appreciate who God is and what God is doing for us, giving us hospitality? What a generous God we celebrate in Jesus today. If we do realize what God has done for us, then let's offer similar hospitality to others, other travelers. Let's welcome them into our lives, especially those who don't fit in or are considered outsiders by society or even our church. Let's start right here in our gathered worship community. What distinguishing marks do we have that signal to others that we're Christians in this worship space? Is it the stained glass windows, the steeple, the altar, the cross? No, it's not the architecture, but the actions of our members inside this building. It's the comfort we give to the grieving, the food to the poor, the companionship and support to one another, the welcome we give to all kinds of travelers. And of course, what distinguishes us here is the body and blood of Christ that we share at this table.